Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is the Midland Reporter Telegram weekend edition for Saturday, December 27th, 2025. Diamondback Granite Ridge Invest in Power. Two oil companies are investing in efforts to develop new natural gas power generation in West Texas. Diamondback Energy and Granite Ridge have entered into financial agreements with Conduit Power as Conduit develops 100 megawatts of new generation for sale of energy and ancillary services to the Electric Reliability Council of Texas. Under the agreements, Conduit will build, own, and operate a total of 200 MWs of distributed power generation capacity to be strategically located across ERCOT's Load Zone West in West Texas. Diamondback and Granite Ridge will each commit to a fixed capacity payment to Conduit in exchange for a preferred share of power proceeds generated by Conduit. Following installation and grid interconnection, Conduit will operate and dispatch the power and related services in ERCOT through its qualified scheduling entity, QSE. Matt Herpich, Conduit's chief executive officer, told the Reporter Telegram the agreement is for 200 megawatts consisting of 10 megawatt sites built at distribution substations in ERCOT's Load Zone West. They will utilize reciprocating engines. Quote, this agreement is under Conduit's EDGE program building 10 megawatts distributed generation plants and allowing E&P companies to participate in capacity payments in exchange for merchant power proceeds. Effectively, we act as a midstream gas to power play. This structure is commercially similar to the structure we have in our JV with Riley Permian. We have the ability to extend the partnership to other interested E&P companies as the opportunity exists for more scale, end quote, Herpich said. In a statement announcing the agreement, Tyler Farquharazon, president and chief executive of Granite Ridge, said, quote, for years, the Permian has suffered from a lack of takeaway capacity for its associated gas. We see this as a win-win opportunity for our shareholders to participate in enhanced well-level economics through power sales and bring up to 200 MWs of much-needed new power generation to the ERCOT grid, end quote. Diamondback officials had no additional comment. The facilities are targeted for phased installation, with the first sites achieving commercial operation in 2026. Golden Whisk Bakery to open new location. A bakery called the Golden Whisk intends to set up a new location. Owned by Lacey Babusette, it currently has a location on West Wadley Avenue, but will look to set up a new shop on West Illinois Avenue. The Golden Whisk was founded in 2017 by Bafousette and specializes in custom cookies and cakes. It is unclear as to what will come of their current location. An application has been filed for a zone amendment change so that the bakery could be established there. The zone change is needed because the property, as well as most buildings in the area, are currently being used as residences. The house is owned but not used by Gary Glasscock, who is involved with Bavusette's application process. After being recommended for approval by Midland's Planning and Zoning Commission, the application was fully approved by Midland City Council. Weekend will be warm, but cold snap could bring snow. If you've loved the unseasonably warm weather we've had in the Permian Basin over the past few weeks, this weekend is going to be just right for you. But take a few minutes Sunday evening to get your winter gear ready and have your snow brush handy just in case. Quote, late Sunday night into Monday morning, we're expecting a change in the atmospheric weather pattern, end quote, said Kenny Greening, meteorologist at the National Weather Service office in Midland. A split flow aloft favors an increase in moisture, which brings an increase in clouds, colder temperatures, and a low chance of snow showers at between 20% and 35%, though meteorologists will get a better idea of the timing and type as the weekend progresses. Quote, our confidence in snow falling isn't that high, though it's in the forecast because the models are definitely showing that it's a possibility, end quote, Greening said. On Saturday, skies will be mostly sunny with a high of 78 and a low of 53 in the evening. For Sunday, the high temperature will be around 72 degrees, and skies will be partly sunny. At night, the new front will send lows to about 34 degrees. On Monday, there is a chance of snow showers early. Otherwise, skies will be mostly cloudy with a high near 43. The low at night will be about 28 degrees. Temperatures around the rest of Texas this weekend will be similar to Midland and Odessa. For those traveling to or from the West Texas town of El Paso, there's a 30% chance of showers after 11 p.m., and rain chances continue through Monday. You might also see rain Sunday night in Houston, Beaumont, and San Antonio. It'll be breezy all weekend in Laredo. Man killed, one injured in Winkler County crash. Winkler County. One man is dead and another is reported as injured following a two-vehicle collision. According to the Texas Department of Public Safety, at approximately 7:20 a.m. on Tuesday, at State Highway 302 and Farm to Market Road 1232, a collision occurred between a 2026 Ford F-250 and a 2023 Ford F-550. DPS reported that Rafael Diaz Hernandez, 38, of Fort Stockton, was pronounced deceased at the scene. According to the DPS report, the preliminary information revealed that the Ford F-550 was traveling eastbound on SH-302, the Ford F-250 was traveling northbound on FM-1232, approaching the intersection of SH-302. In the report, DPS reported that the driver of the F-250, identified as Hernandez, was traveling at an unsafe speed for the weather conditions, heavy fog, and impaired visibility. Hernandez was reported as disregarding the stop sign and striking the F-550. This crash remains under investigation and no additional information has been released to the public at this time. Life tributes. Brenda Holmes, 12/19/1962 to 12/20/2025. Brenda Holmes was born on December 19, 1962 in Fort Smith, Arkansas, to Ralph and Patsy Webb. Brenda is survived by her husband, Dwayne Holmes, her three sons, Stephen Holmes, wife Christina, Braden Holmes, wife Sarah, Alec Holmes, wife Desiree, and her one grandson, Morgan, who was her pride and joy. Brenda also leaves behind her mother, Patsy Webb, and her three brothers, David Webb, his wife Gail, Lloyd Webb, his wife Teresa, and Brian Webb, his partner Kelly. She leaves behind several nieces and nephews. Brenda is predeceased in death by her father, Ralph Webb, her father-in-law, James Holmes. The visitation will begin at 1 p.m. on Monday, December 29th, 2025, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory. Graveside service will follow the viewing at 3 p.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Clarissa M. Olivas. Clarissa M. Olivas, 47, of Midland, passed away Wednesday, December 3rd, 2025. Viewing will be held on Saturday, December 27th, 2025, from 12 o'clock p.m. to 9 o'clock p.m., with a prayer service and rosary at 6 o'clock p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel in Midland, Texas. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Candace Darlene Reynolds. Candace Darlene Merrill Reynolds, 70, of Midland, passed from this life on December 20th, 2025, in Midland. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland. Amended airport parking fees approved. The City of Midland has made changes to its financial plan going into 2026. Including a fee schedule to go into effect on February 1st, 2026. In government, a fee schedule is a complete list of fees that are collected at a given time. In this case, the changes to the fee schedule involve updates to parking at Midland International Air and Spaceport, as well as new ways of collecting revenue, such as paid parking in downtown Midland. The airport side of things carried over into the budget amendments, which reflect the 2024-25 fiscal year budget, but will have an impact on finances for the 2025-26 budget. According to the City of Midland's financial director, Christy Weekland, these amendments were needed because of $800,000 in expenditures that were higher than they had anticipated, as well as to account for the receipt of $123,000 in special event donations. Quote, this happened due to rapid growth in airport activity, which required additional staffing, maintenance, and operational resources, end quote, said Weakland. Quote, these additional costs are fully supported by the higher than expected airport revenue and does not create a structural financial issue for the airport fund, end quote. Railroad Commission steps up gas inspections. Winter has arrived, and inspectors with the Railroad Commission are making sure energy facilities are prepared for the season. As mandated by legislation passed in the aftermath of Winter Storm Uri in 2021, the agency takes steps to ensure adequate natural gas supply to keep Texas homes and businesses safe during the winter season. Those steps include weatherization inspections of critical natural gas facilities currently being conducted throughout the state by the Critical Infrastructure Division. These inspections are expected to continue through the end of March 2026. As part of the agency's commitment to protecting Texans during extreme weather events, CID conducted more than 7,400 inspections of natural gas facilities for weatherization preparedness in FY25 and has already begun work on the FY26 extreme cold inspection schedule. For the new fiscal year, CID has inspected 100% of Tier 1 facilities, which are critical components of gas supply. Tier 1 facilities are oil and gas leases that produce more than 5 million cubic feet of gas daily, gas processing plants, underground gas storage facilities, and natural gas pipelines that directly connect to electricity generation plants. To further strengthen preparedness, CID recently hosted a tabletop exercise with operators. The session provided guidance on inspection readiness, emergency management practices, and weather-related resources to ensure operators have the tools and knowledge needed as Texas heads into the winter months. Additionally, underground natural gas storage provides a critical reserve that can be drawn upon during severe weather emergencies. As of November 30th, 2025, the RRC reported approximately 524.9 billion cubic feet of working gas in storage, which is the highest monthly total recorded in more than 25 years of tracking volumes. Quote, from electric generation to home heating, the RRC is committed to helping keep Texas prepared for winter weather, end quote, said Wei Wong, RRC executive director, in a statement. Quote, this includes ongoing inspections and collaborations with oil and gas operators. We take every step we can to make sure gas flows when we need it, and we want to reassure Texans that the agency takes an all-hands-on-deck approach to protect residents in weather-related emergencies. From gas production to gas storage, Texas is seeing more gas than ever with historic highs, end quote. Battleship Texas $75 million restoration advances. The USS Texas, now the Battleship Texas, led a distinguished career in the U.S. Navy, having survived both world wars and serving as the wartime home to tens of thousands of sailors and Marines. Quote, Texas served with the Grand Fleet during the First World War and earned 5 battle stars during the Second World War, end quote. According to the Battleship Texas Foundation, quote, she fought in North Africa, Normandy, Southern France, Iwo Jima, and Okinawa, and through it all only lost one crew member to enemy fire, end quote. The ship, a New York-class dreadnought, was commissioned on March 12, 1914, at the Norfolk Navy Yard. In 1948, the battleship was donated to the state to serve as a museum and mobile memorial. Today, she is closed to the public while undergoing a $75 million restoration, which is taking place at Gulf Copper Dry Dock and Rig Repairs Galveston Shipyard. According to the nonprofit, repairs include replacing more than 700 tons of steel, painting the hull of the ship, the partial removal and replacement of wood decking, partial superstructure repair, the partial restoration and replacement of anti-aircraft guns, and much more. Travis Davis, Vice President of Operations and COO of the Battleship Texas Foundation, provided an update on the ship's restoration in a YouTube video on the ship's progress, where he said the main deck blasting is complete, with touch-ups needed around turret 3. Quote, the underlying steel deck is in good condition, end quote, he explained. Quote, the wood deck work is progressing, with 70 to 80% of the wood fitted and 25% bedded down, end quote. For the wood deck work, the restoration team is using trapezoidal boards from East Texas for better caulking and watertight seals, Davis said. Quote, the boards are actually trapezoidal in profile, and that's intentional so that we can caulk it and have much more packing material within the board seam. So it's less of a failure risk if the top cap, which is the first line of defense, fails, end quote. In between the boards, a synthetic cotton material and another material will be used to help bind the boards together. Quote, in World War II and earlier, that binding would have been marine glue or pitch. Basically, we opted not to go with that because that is just way too messy, end quote, Davis said. For more updates and a progress report on the restoration process of the iconic ship, go to the Battleship Texas Foundation's website at https://battleshiptexas.org/news. Homeowner granted exception to keep carport at his driveway. An exception was granted for a Midlander to keep a carport at his house. Edgar Chavez, who lives near Washington Park, built the carport over his driveway earlier this month. Quote, the reason I built it was to protect my vehicles from the elements, end quote, Chavez said. Quote, this is my first home too, so I'm trying to improve it and make it look better around, because there's nicer houses and mine's a little bit older, but the carport is what I can afford, end quote. While no one filed an objection to the carport's exception, an anonymous person filed a complaint via C-Click-Fix, forcing Chavez's hand to seek the exception. The city found there are at least two other carports and a gated fence in the area, none of which were cited for being out of compliance or receiving an exception after the fact. City Council even remarked that Chavez's carport is better looking than the others. Quote, I had seen a bunch of people around the neighborhood that already had a carport, end quote, Chavez said. Quote, I based my carport off of one down the street. I built it in a day. And then one Monday, I walked out of my house, and there was a paper already there. If I knew there were certain things you needed to do before you go ahead and do it, I would have come to City Hall and done it. Someone must have been hating on me or something, end quote. City staff recommended denying the exception to Chavez in order to maintain compliance standards, which would have meant that Chavez would have to tear the carport down. However, City Council was sympathetic to Chavez, noticing his neighbors built carports, with Councilman John Norman saying that he has been in contact with Chavez because the house is in his district. Quote, I'm not inclined to punish somebody for trying to do the right thing by seeking an exception, end quote, said Councilman Jack Ladd. Quote, and we have so many of these fly-by-night developed people that come in, don't tell anyone the regulations, and then when they get in trouble, you can't find them. The problem is they go up so quickly, and we only find out about them when they've been done through the honor system or if someone reported them. It's a tough situation, end quote. Quote, unless there's a traffic hazard, we don't actively go after carports, end quote, said Midland's Planning and Development Officer Elizabeth Triggs. Quote, even though our recommendation here is a denial, we have reviewed it for traffic safety and there isn't any issue. It just doesn't meet the setback requirements of the code, end quote. According to Mayor Pro Tem Robin Poole, when she first joined City Council, there were several similar carport cases back-to-back, which prompted the possibility of an update to the city code that would better define the regulations and provide leniency for homeowners. Triggs confirmed the update's existence, but said it had not advanced through staff, adding that this new case would be a good reason to revisit the update and codify it at a later date. Midland City Council ultimately granted Edgar Chavez the exception, allowing him to keep the carport. City of Midland building permits for December 1st through 19th. 10217 Younger Road, new commercial. 609 East Florida Avenue, commercial alteration. 4400 North Big Spring Street, commercial alteration. 2500 Haynes Drive, new commercial. 5200 West Wall Street, commercial accessory building. 200 West Interstate 20, commercial alteration. 2900 West Loop 250 North, commercial alteration. 201 West Wall Street, commercial alteration. 1215 North Midkiff Road, commercial alteration. 2001 West Wall Street, commercial alteration. 4511 North Midkiff Road, commercial alteration. 3801 East Highway 80, manufactured home. 10308 Hernandez Avenue, swimming pool. 2400 Shell Avenue, swimming pool. 6520 Elmwood Drive, swimming pool. 5806 Garrett Drive, swimming pool. 1341 Los Street, new residence. 1344 Hogback Way, new residence. 6005 Kamal Drive, new residence. 801 Crested Butte Court, residential addition. 913 North Main Street, solar panels. 1500 Seaboard Avenue, residential addition. 3718 Roadrunner Trail, residential addition. 2505 Stanislin Avenue, residential addition. 6808 Cactus Trail, residence detached. 2606 West Washington Avenue, new residence. 2917 Bucking Street, new residence. 2873 Firewheel Road, new residence. 6220 Kingsville Street, new residence. 2877 Firewheel Road, new residence. 6212 Kingsville Street, new residence. 5812 Flycatcher Street, new residence. 6513 Chaps Lane, solar panels. 1304 Porterfield Road, new residence. 2909 Bucking Street, new residence. 6224 Kingsville Street, new residence. 2103 North Main Street, solar panels. 2101 North Main Street, solar panels. 6400 Dahlia Avenue, new residence. 6810 Expedition Drive, new residence. 1203 West Cuthbert Avenue, residential addition. 3627 Shell Avenue, residence detached. 4605 Island Drive, residential addition. 2913 Bucking Street, new residence. 6228 Kingsville Street, new residence. 6125 Buckthorn Drive, new residence. 6216 Kingsville Street, new residence. 1700 East Golf Course Road, residential addition. 2605 West Cuthbert Avenue, residential addition. 3607 Gray Wolf Trail, new residence. 6524 Elmwood Drive, new residence. 6133 Buckthorn Drive, new residence. 6300 Kingsville Street, new residence. 6128 Buckthorn Drive, new residence. 2856 Firewheel Road, new residence. 2865 Firewheel Road, new residence. 2860 Firewheel Road, new residence. 2869 Firewheel Road, new residence. 2864 Firewheel Road, new residence. 2906 Bucking Street, new residence. 2868 Firewheel Road, new residence. 3803 Cimarron Avenue, residential addition. 2108 Western Drive, residential alteration. 1909 English Drive, solar panels. 1903 English Drive, solar panels. 5001 Brazos Avenue, residence detached. 5912 Grape Creek, new residence. 6132 Buckthorn Drive, new residence. 3209 Courtyard Drive, sign. 3328 North Midkiff Road, sign. 4915 West Loop 250 North, sign. 100 North Main Street, sign. 6403 West Highway 158, sign. Source, City of Midland. Oil report. ExxonMobil. Environmentalist calls for less rancor in energy debate. Environmental advocates have been traveling a rougher road this year with the change in administrations. Those challenges, the best way forward, and what lies ahead were the focus of a recent Oilfield Strong podcast. Podcast host Grant Swartzwelder, president of OTA Environmental Solutions, opened the conversation by asking Colin Layden, Texas State Director for the Environmental Defense Fund, quote, how you see the market right now for your business, end quote. Layden acknowledged that times have been tough this year for environmental advocates, especially at the federal level. Quote, what we've been seeing out of the current administration was certainly not something I think folks expected, end quote, he said. Quote, we obviously thought it would be a big change from where things were, but we probably did not anticipate the speed and the aggressiveness of the rollbacks, of even going after some issues that many of us thought were probably off the table or at least not touchable, end quote. He disagreed with the contention that the actions were a pushback to actions taken in the previous administration. noting that environmental advocates have worked with both Republican and Democratic administrations and expect changes from new administrations. Quote, I firmly believe that a lot of the environmental issues remain bipartisan issues, and we can talk about some of those. As far as it being sort of a reaction to overzealousness on the part of environmentalists, I would tend to say no, but that's because I think issues like climate change are urgent, and so aggressive action is needed, end quote, Layden said. The nation ended up with modern environmental advocacy in the 1960s and 1970s when, quote, you know, from my perspective, we really needed it. I mean, we had rivers on fire, end quote, he said. Republican President Richard Nixon signed legislation founding the Environmental Protection Agency, and Republican President George H.W. Bush signed revisions to the Clean Air Act. Now, he said, advocates are concerned about issues like climate change, but there are also those who recognize the need to build things like clean energy facilities and transmission lines. The two compared U.S. policy to policies in China and Pakistan, among other nations that are not moving away from fossil fuels but diversifying energy mixes. Quote, I'll try this analogy out on you. I feel like this administration's energy policy is as if it's 1910 and the Model T has been out for 2 years, growing in popularity, but the government, instead of wanting to build the infrastructure to support the Model T, has decided to go all in on horses, end quote, Layden said. He added that if the rest of the world is trying to diversify its fuel mix and move to as much no-emission or low-emission sources as possible, quote, where does that leave the U.S. in 20 or 30 years, end quote. Being adversarial is just as unproductive as promoting fossil fuels to the exclusion of other sources, he said. Quote, I don't think environmentalists have done a good job of communicating the fact oil and gas people wake up every day wanting to feel good about the work they do and feel like they're delivering the energy the world needs. To have someone screaming and yelling at them and calling them an evil person, that doesn't build bridges, end quote, Layden said. He expressed concern Texas regulators may be rushing the process of allowing the discharge of treated produced water and urged U.S. Energy Secretary Chris Wright to consider new technologies like next-generation geothermal energy. Next-generation geothermal technology could be very beneficial in Texas, he noted. Quote, the idea behind next-generation geothermal technology is you take the technology the oil and gas industry has developed over the last 40 to 50 years in drilling deep and access those hot rocks at a deeper level, and all of a sudden you have geothermal energy in many, many more places, including possibly Texas, end quote, he said. Quote, that industry is new, and the companies that are doing it are here in Texas, so the intellectual capital for that is here in Texas, and it's using existing oil and gas technology. So it's a transfer of intellectual capital from the industry itself, and that could make a really nice synergy, end quote.
Report says Permian gas seen driving LNG growth. Global thirst for U.S. liquefied natural gas is expected to be met by Permian Basin natural gas finding its way to the Gulf Coast via pipelines. A new report from Enverus Intelligence Research lays out just how critical Permian Basin natural gas will be. EIR projects U.S. LNG feed gas demand will rise to 33 billion cubic feet a day by 2030, with the potential to approach 50 BCF a day if planned expansions move forward. To support this growth, approximately 9 BCF a day of new Permian pipeline capacity is expected to be added eastward toward the Gulf Coast. The additions would connect West Texas output with the Agua Dulce and Katy hubs, along with 12.25 BCF a day of additional pipeline capacity along the coast dedicated to supplying LNG facilities and mitigating bottlenecks. Quote, while there is ample pipeline capacity from the Permian Basin and along the Gulf Coast to supply incremental LNG feed gas to 2030, the challenge lies in ensuring long-term natural gas supply for additional LNG expansion, end quote, said Alex Labajevic, a director at EIR, in the report. The Haynesville play is expected to peak at 19 BCF a day in 2033 before declining, limiting its ability to support future LNG expansions. The Permian Basin's dry gas output, however, is forecast to increase to approximately 40 BCF a day by 2050. But further infrastructure and resource development will be necessary to close a projected 2 to 8 BCF a day supply gap by 2035. Josephine Mills, an analyst at EIR, told the Reporter-Telegram, quote, "We have Haynesville peaking due to lack of inventory depth, an issue we don't have in the Permian. We expect Permian natural gas production will continue to grow modestly through our forecast time period, the next 25 years, end quote. Mills said she believes there will be appetite for investment in the needed infrastructure, from pipelines to associated facilities such as compression and gas-fired plants. But in this case, she said, there may be issues on the supply chain side. EIR's study notes market misconceptions persist regarding Permian gas quality and infrastructure, which could be solvable with targeted investment. Quote, an example of a concern we hear is the nitrogen content in Permian gas. However, as the economics are driven by oil, we see the additional cost of processing the gas as nominal, end quote, Mills said.
Midland Energy Library preserves trove of well data. A lot of information is lurking inside the unassuming building at 2900 Front Street, known as the Midland Energy Library. Quote, all of the upcoming geologists and geophysicists think all the important information is online, end quote, said Trace Munch, manager of the library. Quote, a lot of data was never released. We have a lot of unreleased data no one knows exists, end quote. As an example, he said one of the library's member companies was looking for data in a county in north central Texas. A company that sells logs only had 3 or 4, whereas the library had several hundred logs from that county. The library has its roots in the oil bust of the 1980s when companies were closing and throwing away a lot of logs, mud logs, and other data. Mach said Dick Johns and Hugh Frenzel, along with several of their friends, began collecting that discarded data, going so far as dumpster diving in the evenings. It has grown from a small office in the Midland Tower building to the current 30,000-square-foot building. Inside that large warehouse-like space are 100,000 sample logs, 400,000 large and small-scale logs, 20,000 mud logs that were never released to the Railroad Commission, 10,000 core analyses, and 5,000 drill stem tests. In fact, he said a third of the building is still a warehouse, quote, chock full of data we haven't integrated yet, end quote. In its treasure trove of data is information dating back to the 1920s and 1930s on wells that helped make the Permian Basin. Those include scouting tickets from some of the companies that came to the Permian Basin after oil was first found, such as Union Oil of California, Lion Oil, Pure Oil, Standard Oil, U.S. Smelting, Texaco, Conoco, and Gulf Oil, many of which are no longer in business or have merged with other companies. Some of the data could help fill in gaps as companies look to the fringes of the Permian Basin or to deeper benches in the search for new Tier 1 locations. Quote, vertical logs are still helpful, especially for independents and smaller operators, end quote, he said. The library is in the process of building a digital database to preserve its collection, make its data easier to access, and serve as an online library allowing users to check out data. Mach said he would appreciate more volunteers to help with that process. Mach said he wants to get this new wave of professionals and students to understand the value of the historical information inside the library. Quote, we're letting everyone know we're still here. We still have information, end quote, he said. Quote, we need companies to look at us and what we offer, end quote. The library is membership-driven, but also works with area colleges, allowing students to use it for free. Transwestern invests in Frontier Gen to speed AI data center campuses in South Texas. Frontier Gen, a Houston-based developer of, quote, infrastructure nexus, end quote, campuses in South Texas, has received an investment from Transwestern, a real estate firm with expertise in investment development and services. The partnership will accelerate the planning and build-out of infrastructure-ready, AI-focused data center and advanced manufacturing campuses across the region. Frontier Gen brings to the partnership its expertise in infrastructure development and customized power delivery systems, while Transwestern brings its diversified commercial real estate expertise and global network. The combination is a tangible example of what Jason Gennaro, Frontier Gen chief executive, calls Texas molecules becoming contracted megawatts that can support artificial intelligence, compute, and advanced industrial loads. Quote, hyperscalers require infrastructure that's comparable to mid-sized cities, end quote, said Jason Gennaro, Frontier Gen chief executive officer. Speaking with the Reporter-Telegram, he said these centers look to locate where energy, fiber, and land converge. And even though the partnership will work in South Texas, he said the Permian Basin's natural gas output will play a critical role. Quote, the Permian Basin is not just a gas station, it is a reliability engine for U.S. power, end quote, he said. Quote, its fuel abundance being turned into firm megawatts, which the U.S. needs, end quote. Gennaro estimates about $1 trillion has been invested in the Permian Basin, Eagle Ford, and Haynesville, including midstream during the shale revolution. He said the next chapter will be turning that energy backbone into the foundation of the AI economy. Quote, Texas is advantaged. It's a beneficiary of the shale revolution. It is the nation's most scalable infrastructure platform, sitting at the intersection of world-class natural gas supply, rapidly expanding transmission, diverse renewable resources, and a market structure that rewards speed, reliability, and investment, end quote, he said. Texas is also advantaged because with the Electric Reliability Council of Texas Fast Interconnection Model, more than 350,000 miles of natural gas pipelines and Tier 1 fiber routes, it can deliver firm power at the 100 to 500 megawatt scale faster than any other state. Quote, data centers will be one of the defining stories of the next decade, shaping not only the Texas economy, but the U.S. economy, specifically its impact on economic productivity and the energy resources it consumes, end quote, Gennaro said. Quote, in my opinion, we are entering America's fourth industrial revolution, end quote.
10 doctor-recommended health resolutions for 2026. With a new year ahead, the American Medical Association, AMA, is offering Americans 10 evidence-based tips for staying healthy in 2026 and beyond. Get health screenings, schedule preventative visits, tests, and screenings so your physician can catch a condition before they become more serious. Manage stress. Mental health is part of overall health. Techniques such as meditation, deep breathing, and yoga can help reduce stress. Ask for help from a mental health professional when you need it. Be physically active. Start the year off by prioritizing physical activity. Strive for at least 150 minutes of moderate intensity activity or 75 minutes of vigorous intensive activity each week. If you have a sedentary lifestyle or primarily sit for long stretches at work, build in frequent breaks to stretch and move throughout your day. Follow a healthy diet. Drink water instead of sugar-sweetened beverages and eat nutritious whole foods, including fruits, vegetables, whole grains, nuts, and seeds, low-fat dairy products, and lean proteins. Avoid unhealthy, ultra-processed foods, especially those with high levels of added sodium, saturated fats, and sugar. Drinking sugary beverages, even 100% fruit juice, is associated with a higher mortality risk, according to a study published in the Journal of American Medical Association Network Open. Stay hydrated. Drink plenty of water or other beverages composed mostly of water, such as milk or herbal tea, to avoid dehydration and to keep your body functioning properly. Even mild dehydration can drain your energy and make you tired. Adult men should get about 15 and a half cups of fluids a day, and women should get 11 and a half cups, according to the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine. And get plenty of good sleep. To maintain your health and emotional well-being, most adults need 7 to 9 hours of quality sleep. Rest helps boost immunity and improve mental clarity. Update vaccinations. Vaccinations remain the best defense against flu and other serious respiratory viruses. Since significant flu activity can stretch into May, it's not too late to get a flu shot. The AMA recommends vaccination as long as the threat of flu remains. Talk with your physician or other healthcare professionals to determine which vaccines are right for you. To cut through vaccine confusion and have open, honest conversations with your physician, first go to the AMA website for evidence-based information. For help finding a flu vaccine in your area, visit getmyflushot.org. Drink in moderation. If consuming alcohol, do so in moderation as defined by the U.S. Dietary Guidelines. Up to one drink per day for women and two drinks for men, and only for adults of legal drinking age. Quit tobacco, nicotine, and e-cigarettes. Ask your doctor or healthcare professional for resources and guidance to help quit smoking, vaping, or using other nicotine products. Make your home and car smoke-free to eliminate secondhand smoke exposure. Follow medication directions. When taking prescriptions, store them safely to prevent diversion or misuse and properly dispose of any leftover medication. If you're prescribed antibiotics, complete the full course to prevent antibiotic resistance. For more health tips and resources, visit ama-assn.org. With the holiday cookies eaten and those missed workouts officially last year's worry, the new year is a great chance to refocus on the healthy choices you want to make in 2026. Even tiny changes now can snowball into major gains for your long-term health. New Year's Traditions by Carol A. Gates, Chief Nursing Officer at Odessa Regional Medical Center. I was married on Friday the 13th, and considering my husband and I have been married for over 30 years, I think it's safe to say, in this case at least, that day was not bad luck. But that day we were married was also before I became a nurse. As crazy as it sounds, especially to the scientist in me, healthcare has made me superstitious. I'm not sure I would choose that day again if I had a wedding day do-over. Maybe it's self-fulfilling prophecy or correlation being mistaken for causation, but I worry about the full moon, knock on wood, and avoid saying certain words or phrases on a regular basis to ward off evil spirits, along with many, many of my scientist colleagues. It's also why, even though I cannot stand them, I choke down black-eyed peas every New Year's Day. In that spirit, I thought it would be fun to talk about New Year's traditions across the world in hopes that it might give you some ideas of how to celebrate your New Year's and maybe bring a bit of good fortune your way. According to the Farmer's Almanac, there are several traditions that cross multiple cultures. The first is to make some noise. Fireworks, church bells, gunfire, plate throwing, and singing are all ways different cultures make noise to ward off demons, darkness, and bad spirits. Having said that, some of those activities can be risky to you and to others. Singing and bell ringing are probably your best choices among those. Lucky foods include black-eyed peas in the southern U.S., as we discussed. In Spain, they eat 12 grapes during the 12 strokes of midnight, and if they succeed before the chimes stop, they will have a good luck all year. In Scotland, oat cakes are a traditional New Year's food, and in many cultures, ring and round-shaped foods are considered to bring good fortune. Central European cultures eat sauerkraut for good luck. In India and Pakistan, eating rice promises prosperity. A Jewish tradition is to dip apples in honey for good fortune, and in Switzerland, dollops of whipped cream are dropped onto the floor in promise of the riches of the year to come. Toasting the new year to bring good luck is also a multicultural tradition from champagne, cava, and other sparkling wines to punches like wassail and hot pints. If you choose to ensure good luck in this manner, please make sure you don't immediately reverse any good fortune gained by drinking and driving or letting one in your company drink and drive. Another New Year's tradition to bring good things to the future is kissing the person you hope to keep kissing. Filling cupboards and pockets and returning things that you have borrowed are supposed to bring abundance in the new year as well. New Year's resolutions have been a tradition across the world since the time of the Babylonians. If you make any resolutions to improve your health over the next year, please make sure that a conversation with your primary health care provider is part of that resolution. They will have many ways to help you make sure your resolution is successful. Regardless of how you choose to celebrate the new year and if you participate in traditions to bring you good fortune in 2026, I very much hope that you have a safe, healthy, and happy new year. Obituaries. Donna Lee Barbie, age 79, of Odessa, passed away on December the 19th. A viewing was held on Friday, December the 26th at Sunset Memorial. Jimmy Woodall Darden, age 71 of Odessa, died Sunday, December the 21st in Odessa. Memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. January the 3rd at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Kathleen Ann Lightfoot, age 84 of Odessa, died Friday, December the 19th in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. January the 3rd at Northside Baptist Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Candace Darlene Reynolds, age 70 of Midland, died Saturday, December the 20th in Midland. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home, Crematory of Midland. Odessa veterinarian retires after 7 decades. Ask most veterinarians why they do what they do, and they'll tell you it's because of their love for animals. In the case of Odessa veterinarian Thomas Elrod, he loved animals so much he wound up providing care for them for 70 years. Elrod recently retired at 92 years old after 7 decades of treating and caring for a lot of animals, ranging from horses and cattle to cats and dogs. "Right now, I don't know how to feel about retirement," he said during a recent interview as he and his son and daughter, Thomas and Tricia Elrod, took a break from boxing up decades of memories at his closed clinic at 2475 East 11th Street. "People have been asking me what I'm going to do when I retire," he said with a smile and a chuckle. "I've got an answer for them. Hide out." December 13th was officially Elrod's last day, capping a career that began back in 1956 when he graduated from vet school at Texas A&M University. Having grown up on a nearby ranch, Elrod had planned to return to the ranch after graduation to help care for his father's livestock, but not before he served as an officer and veterinarian in the Army for a couple of years. During his service, Elrod was stationed in the United States and later Germany, and his job was to monitor operations at slaughterhouses and dairies to ensure the meat and dairy products they sold to the Army were safe and of good quality. Elrod said that upon leaving the Army, he returned to Odessa, where his father helped him build his first clinic on East 2nd Street. Although he started out treating large animals, livestock such as cattle and horses, Elrod said he found that he also enjoyed treating small animals. It would lead to long days that he said were so worthwhile. Tricia Elrod said her father would arrive at his clinic each day and treat small animals from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Then he would make his rounds treating large animals until 10 p.m. Elrod recalls one case when a rancher called him because a heifer was having trouble delivering a calf on a ranch near Midkiff. By the time Elrod reached the animal, it was dark. "I could tell there was no way that little heifer was going to be able to have that calf on her own. So by car light and flashlight, I performed a cesarean section on that little heifer." The rancher called Elrod the next day to inform him Mama and baby were doing just fine. Whether a dog had picked a fight with a porcupine or a horse was bitten on the nose by a rattlesnake, he was able to administer care, his son wrote of his father in a recent tribute. And despite his busy schedule, Elrod still had time to be active in his church, First Methodist Church. He was also honored by the Heritage of Odessa Foundation in 2018 as a community statesman in the category of ranching and agriculture. But perhaps most important of all, he still found time to be a great father to his son and daughter. "He says he neglected us, but he didn't," Tricia Elrod said, thinking back on her and her brother's childhood. "He would help with our math and science lessons, and I don't think he ever missed a band concert. I don't think he ever missed a horse show." It was only 3 weeks ago when a state veterinarian board inspector gave him the nod to continue practicing, and he recently completed the required 17 hours of continuing education that entitles him to continue practicing through 2027. But Elrod said he feels right to retire now. "I'm leaving here with everything in good shape. Besides, he still will be busy helping his son and daughter raise registered American quarter horses, as well as Angus and Hereford cattle on nearby family ranch land. and he is in his 63rd year serving on the board of directors for the Sand Hills Stock Show and Rodeo. In fact, he currently serves as board chairman. Elwood wraps up his 70-year career feeling good about what he has accomplished, caring for and serving not only pets, but also people. "It was a treat to be a veterinarian that long," he said. "I was very fortunate." Quick hits. The Starbright Village at McKinney Park is open to the public nightly through January the 1st. Visitors can drive through or walk through the lights. Aaron Watson, the Sand Hills Stock Show and Rodeo, has announced Texas country music star Aaron Watson as the headline performer for 2026. Watson will take the stage on January 16, 2026, bringing his signature blend of classic country storytelling and electrifying stage presence. The Sand Hills Rodeo features professional rodeo action, livestock shows, and numerous roping events during its run from January 8th to the 17th. Texas rising star Caleb Young will open the concert at 9:30 p.m. The after rodeo dance will be held in Building G and will offer VIP tables for purchase. The Sand Hills Rodeo will feature top competitors from the Professional Rodeo Cowboys Association and the Women's Professional Rodeo Association, delivering six nights of thrilling rodeo action. The Butler and Son Rodeo Company will provide the livestock. For tickets or more information, visit sandhillssr.com. Meals on Wheels. For millions of older adults, the holidays bring more silence than celebration. One in two seniors living alone can't afford basic needs, forcing impossible choices between paying for food or heating their homes. Inclement weather further isolates homebound seniors, increasing loneliness and the risk of malnutrition. That's why Meals on Wheels of Odessa is asking Odessa to end the wait and remember our most vulnerable seniors all throughout the season by giving and donating to MOWO. Meals on Wheels is best known for delivering nutritious meals to older adults who are unable to shop for or prepare meals themselves. However, the meal itself opens the door to a friendly visit, a health and safety check, and social connection. That's why Meals on Wheels is leveraging a new campaign created by Meals on Wheels America that illuminates how the holidays often intensify the loneliness many older adults feel year-round, turning what should be a joyful season into a painful reminder of isolation. Inspired by the holiday classic Silent Night, the video showcases how many homebound seniors experience not only silent nights, but silent weeks, months, and even years. For some, their only moments of connection come from Meals on Wheels volunteers. This is especially prudent as this year's holiday season comes at a time when there are over 160 older Odessans waiting for a knock from a dedicated Meals on Wheels volunteer. For more information on how you can volunteer, contribute, or donate for the seniors in Odessa, go to mowo.org or give them a call at 432-333-6451. The holiday spirit matters, but so does what happens after. During the holiday season, many people feel a renewed sense of generosity. It's a time when communities come alive with food drives, toy collections, volunteer events, and donation campaigns, all fueled by the spirit of giving. While this seasonal energy can be powerful, the need it responds to doesn't fade when the decorations come down. Giving back is not only essential during the holidays, it's also the foundation of stronger, more resilient communities year-round. People in nearly every community face challenges, whether it's affording holiday presents or making basic needs like food, rent, and utilities. For many families, current economic strains are forcing them to make tough decisions like sacrificing necessities or depleting savings to create moments of holiday joy. This is a time to rally support and help neighbors in need. Right now, many community members who didn't previously need help are seeking support. Acts of generosity, large and small, help close gaps and strengthen communities. When individuals and businesses give their time, resources, and talent, they can help ensure everyone has a fair chance to not only survive, but thrive. Communities rely on nonprofit organizations like United Way, one of the oldest and largest organizations committed to tackling local challenges and mobilizing communities to improve lives. With a presence in nearly 99% of communities across the U.S., the organization recognizes the power of giving and relies on seasonal and year-round generosity to deliver food and housing assistance, youth programs, mental health support, disaster recovery, and more. This holiday season and beyond, to assist your community, consider taking actions such as volunteering. Offering your time is one way to make a real change in your community while helping build a more resilient future for all. What's more, research shows the personal benefits of volunteering, such as reduced feelings of isolation, loneliness, and risk of depression. Whether as a community event, ongoing support, or in-person activities, making a difference for others feels good. Donating, sharing your financial resources can play a vital role in helping communities thrive. Your donation can help put food on the table for families in need, support kids who are struggling, or provide mental health services to the most vulnerable individuals. Remember, your gift of any size combines with the gifts of others and builds stronger, more resilient communities. Sharing expertise or talent. Generosity can take many forms. Making a difference isn't just about time and money. It can also mean sharing skills or knowledge, and even social networks to bolster charitable events. Giving back builds a shared sense of responsibility. It reminds people that strong communities don't happen by accident. They're created through connection, compassion, and collective action. Supporting causes you believe in. Every community faces their own unique, pressing challenges, and almost everyone has a cause that's close to their hearts. Identify organizations working to advance those causes and make a plan to support them. For opportunities to support your community this holiday season and make generosity a year-round tradition, at unitedway.org/local.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.